Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sans Pants Radio, equal parts lit and woke.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, INEOS presents Plumbing the Death Star UK Tour with Adam News. So, most shows have sold out, but there's still a couple of spots available for the Edinburgh Matinee Show, and we've opened up more seats for the Birmingham gig. Just head to sanspantsradio.com/live to grab your tickets before they're gone. We're still waiting on a few more venues to get back to us, so follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the most up-to-date information. Or consider heading to sanspantsplus.com and becoming a member today. You'll be the very first to hear of any news regarding future live shows, get 10% off any live show tickets, and access to a bunch of exclusive content, forums, and even a Discord. That's sanspantsplus.com.
Welcome to another episode of Movie Maintenance. I'm Gabe.
I'm Sean.
I'm Michael.
I'm Adam.
Who are our guests today for a very specific reason, because today we're talking about how to get a film made in Australia. How do you get a film made in Australia?
I have no idea. I've got to be honest, I don't watch a heap of Australian films. And a lot of my friends are probably the same. If an Australian film comes out in the cinema, it's kind of not like, oh, let's go see that one. I'm more interested in whatever The Rock's doing.
Yeah, realistically, yeah.
But, he's not doing Australian films?
I really want him to. Point, no. Like, we've got to get him down here. He'd love to film something down here, wouldn't he?
Like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've definitely seen Australian films that I really like, but I remember like something that really stuck with me was when we were at the Victorian College of the Arts, and I think it was at the time when there was talk of Tony Abbott cutting arts funding, and one of the girls in our class asked the head of our course, he was like, oh, well, you know, what do you think of that? And he was like, good. And she was like really taken aback. She was like, what do you mean? And he goes, you do realize like most Australian films are funded by the government, which means you give them a script that could be like perfectly polished, really good. And they'll be like, yeah, yeah, cool. But like, you know, where's the Indigenous story? Where's this? Which, you know, is admirable, but like not necessarily suits every film.
Yep.
And so his take ultimately was, you know, I would rather the films were funded by business people who look for the best possible product than by government bodies who are looking to push some kind of social agenda. And his take was that so much of Australian film is what he called suburban misery porn, where it's like either that or it's outback comedies that are essentially extended tourism ads. Like even something like Reuben Guthrie, which came out last year or the year before, which is a film about alcoholism, but like a comedy about alcoholism, was based on a play by Brendan Cowell. I saw that play and I thought it was one of the best things I'd ever seen. Like I thought it was incredibly powerful, really stuck with me, really got like a really visceral reaction out of me. I saw the movie and what they'd done was that they'd toned down all the rougher, edgier parts of it, but they'd amped up all the big, beautiful, sweeping shots of Sydney, yeah. All of that stuff, basically as much as possible to like glorify the city. Same as Any Questions for Ben, which was ostensibly kind of...
That was,
know,
in Melbourne, right?
That was in Melbourne, yeah.
It's basically like a tourist thing. Like they try and put as much stuff in there.
If you took away the sweeping shots of Melbourne out of that film, it would be 10 minutes long.
Yeah. But like, that's the funding bodies really want you to do that.
Yeah.
Like they push very hard for that. If you make a film about the Northern Territory or something, like, perfect, show us, like, or even like Central Australia, they just want all that scenery. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it feels like that's kind of, there's this real binary of like Australian films are either these huge tourism ads and those seem to be the ones that get like a lot of attention, or they're like these really small, really depressing, you know, suburban misery porn or outback misery
shot in a kitchen and in a house.
Yeah, exactly. Because it seems like you can't really afford to sort of go outside of that. But going over to you guys. So yeah. You guys have made a feature film that's in the post-production phase stage at the moment.
We have, yeah.
And it is not like the majority of other Australian films. So if you want to kind of tell us a bit about that.
Well, I guess for us, we started with a film that we would want to see. And I think that's where all the best, when it comes to creating things, you always want to start with what you would want to go to as an audience member. So we're now in post-production on the film Space Time, which is a big, fun science fiction adventure film, which kind of does all the things you're not meant to do in an independent production. And I think there are quite a few things that we do that aren't typical of Australian films either.
Certainly the old Australian films. Like I think it is kind of starting to change. I think there is this shift that's about to come that there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think whenever you have that, whenever there are audiences out there who see a gap in what they want to see, there's always has to be a response to that. And that's kind of what's coming. And I think we're sort of in that group. And yeah, hopefully things are going to be changing. Hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I feel a lot like some of the Australian films I've seen. Like, I went through a stage a couple of years ago where Cinema Nova on Lygon Street were doing every film was $6.
Yeah.
And so I would go there every Monday, first thing in the morning, and I would just see the first thing that was on. When I walked out, I would see the next thing that was on and the next thing that was on. And consequently, I would just end up seeing a lot of films I never would have watched otherwise. One of the films I saw at the time was a little Aussie film called The Infinite Man. I don't know if you're familiar with
it. No.
Really,
so funny,
really
before when you were like, oh, we don't see many Australian films, and I'm in my head thinking, oh, that's a shame, and you've now mentioned three of them, and I'm like, oh, I missed that one. Oh.
Yeah, no, Infinite Man was great. It was like, it was a time travel comedy,
yeah,
and it was made for maybe $5.
Oh, like, I've seen the trailer for this.
Yeah. And it's basically, the premise, it's so, so good. It's about this guy who's like a scientist, and he kind of neglects his girlfriend and she's sort of a bit pissed off about this. And so basically he tries to take away for this romantic weekend. But because he's so pedantic, he basically desperately wants to replicate this romantic weekend they had a year ago. And it's in this resort out in the desert. And they just had this perfect weekend there together. And so he takes her out there and he's got an itinerary. He wants to literally relive that weekend. It's like, no, we're going to do exactly what we did a year ago because that was perfect and this will fix our relationship. Except the one thing he hasn't done in that time is to check if the resort is still running, and he gets there and it's completely abandoned. And he's like, and he gets really angry. He's like, no, this is gonna be the perfect weekend, it's gonna be the perfect weekend. And then next thing, his girlfriend's ex, played by Alex Dimitriadis, turns up, who was like a guy who was obsessed with being like a Greek javelin sort of classic Olympian, and he kind of turns up with like something that belongs to her, and he's like, and so the main character, he's furious. He's like, how the fuck did this guy find out about it? And he gets really angry and he just tells them both to leave. He's like, just leave, and basically breaks up with her, and she leaves, and he's in a furious mood. He's angry at himself, he's angry at her. And so he builds a time machine. So he spends a year building a time machine, and he's like, I'm going to go back and I'm going to relive that weekend. And then it just gets weird. And basically the film only has three actors, one set. It never leaves this resort, this abandoned resort in the middle of nowhere. And it's only the three of them, except what happens is that as he starts going back in time, more of him turn up. He goes back in time, but then there's already a version of him who's like taking the girlfriend away.
Yeah.
And then another version of her comes up to him and is like, hey, all right, come on, we need to do this. And he's like, wait, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
And suddenly it splits off to the point where there's like five of each of them,
okay,
like from different times,
yeah,
like coming back and yeah, like, and just kind of getting in each other's way and everything.
Yeah.
And
oh,
then
this
in the end,
great.
Yeah. And that's it. And it's like, it's great. It's 90 minutes, three actors, one set, but it's the perfect example. And in the end, it all makes sense. It all comes together beautifully. And
So spoilers for Infinite Man.
No, I haven't even touched on the good stuff.
All right, okay.
But it's also one of those great films where it's like, it's so on theme. In the end, it's about the fact that in a relationship, you can't control everything.
Yeah.
You can't make everything the way you want it to be.
Mm.
But what's so good about it is that it's a prime example of accepting your limitations, and not only accepting them, but being like, okay, we can only afford three actors. Let's get infinite versions of those three actors.
Yeah.
And we can only afford one location. Sweet, let's make that part of it. And so it literally folds its limitations into the fabric of the film, and it works beautifully. So, I mean, like, that's one example of, like, and that's kind of, I think, the sad thing, because it's like, I don't see many Australian films. I would not have seen that film if I didn't happen to be going through the stage.
Was it well-received at the time?
It was, but it was just
but nobody
was
saw
so
it.
Small, and I don't think it had the money to really.
That's another thing. There's no money for marketing as well.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a massive
and that's it,
factor.
It kind of falls under the radar.
That's the thing. Like, a lot of these, like, because we know about what films are coming out and stuff, but a lot of the Australian films, you just don't hear about them.
No,
like,
not
where
really.
Do you hear about them?
The thing is, there's so much out there. And it's like, I mean, my agents always like to me, you need to be watching more Australian film, you need to be watching more Australian TV. These are shows you need to be watching. And I'm like, yep, cool. But also the new season of Fargo just started. And it's like, am I really going to like, and I know I should because supporting the industry and all of that, but it's like, am I really going to go out of my way to like watch this thing I know nothing about when there's already so much out there? And it's like, I barely have enough time to consume the things I want to consume, you know?
Yeah.
In articulating that, aren't you kind of the perfect audience member in that there is so much stuff out there to see, for the person who's not in the industry and the person who's not wanting to support and give it a go, it's like you have the point of view, which is I'm looking at everything that's out there and saying, man, I've got Fargo to watch with this, I've got that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will never see these little things. You've got to make something that stands.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amongst that,
yeah.
You've got to make something that makes absolutely. You go, man, I've got Fargo, I've got Space Time. Man,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
man,
yeah.
It's going to be great, you know.
And just like, what's going
to Space Time, obviously. Yeah.
Everybody should watch Space Time.
For me, that's the beauty of Space Time.
Yeah.
Because it's completely different to most of the stuff that, you know, Australia are making. Mm. And that's kind of the appeal of it. Is that sort of where you guys came at it? You were like...
Not really, no. It was much more organic that it is just, even when we were doing shorts, we're just trying to make films that we want to see ourselves because they're the films that we ultimately want to be making. Even if they're like not in the form, they don't have the budget, they don't have the, you know, resources that we, you know, we'd love to be doing the big budget, even in a small form, just for that to be the calling card, to be like, well, this is what we've done with a little. How about try giving us a lot? That even when we were doing short films, we were doing like spy comedies and monster movies and that sort of thing, that this is just what we want to do. It's not really a response to the market or what's out there or what could be out there. It's just like, well, let's just make something that we like.
If you'd approached it as a response to the market or as, I guess, a rebuttal to the Australian film industry as it stands, that would be really disingenuous. And that would be... I think that would show.
It would almost turn into one of the tourist things that you were just talking about.
Exactly, kind of be passionless.
Yeah.
It's much more innocent, I think, our approach. It's
which is great. Yeah. It's the right way to do it because that way it's like, no, you're approaching it from a place of love and from passion and being like, this is the story I want to tell. I mean, a lot of my work is in theatre and I remember like my first sort of Melbourne play reunion a few years ago. It was like tiny, tiny little show, like, you know, four people, one room, no marketing, no nothing. It was just a little show, five shows and that was it. I remember putting it on and like, I didn't really think, again, I approached it from a place of pure innocence. I was like, I wasn't trying to like, you know, start a career or anything like that. It was just, here was a play I wanted to put on and here was a story I wanted to tell. And I put it on and I remember a friend of mine who was a filmmaker, who was quite a bit older and quite a bit more experienced than me. He came out of the play afterwards and it wasn't a great play by any stretch of the imagination, but he came out afterwards and he came up to me and goes, dude, you know, I see a lot of plays in Melbourne and I cannot tell you how refreshing it is to just see a fun story. Because he's like, most of what I see is like aspiring for some lofty artistic intention or something.
Yeah.
And he goes, I cannot tell you how refreshing it is to see something that is just a story.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been my approach to theater for a long time is like, because I mean, you see the plays that are going on and everything has brave and daring and thought provoking and all of that. It's all artistic and out there. And I'm sure it's got great themes and whatever.
Which I will like, say that there's a lot of that stuff is good and it's valid and but it usually comes the other way. It's when someone has an important story to tell or like they actually have this burning desire. What it often is though is someone who sort of says to themselves, well, I am an artist and I have to be this and I have to have people acknowledge me as whatever. And it just ends up being a mess and it's just something that they can never sort of
But the thing
get
is,
out
not
of.
Everything can be a revolutionary masterpiece.
Yeah.
And
it shouldn't like, because then it destroys the revolutionary masterpiece.
Exactly. On top of that, it's like when that's the stuff that gets funding, like, and of course that's what gets funding because, like, you know, if it's about something serious or it's about something that's in the public eye or whatever, and yeah, sure, that gets funding, but suddenly it becomes ubiquitous. Mm. It's like every play that's getting government funding, every film that's getting government funding is very, and I say in huge inverted commas, important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, but like when everything's important, nothing's important, you know?
Yeah.
So suddenly a film like yours, which not to damn you with faint praise, but like seems a lot more kind of mainstream and fun, like that suddenly becomes the exception when it's like these other things that people are throwing money at are meant to be the exceptions to the rule.
The thing that's so backwards about sort of what we're talking about at the moment is you have films, like we look back on like American cinema for the last like 30 or 40 years and you've got films that come out and I don't think at any point in the pitch they're saying it's about these themes and it's going to speak to these issues. That's the thing that comes after. That's the thing that the director injects into the mainstream story that the audience will engage with. And it's later on that the critics or, you know...
they realize what it's talking about.
Yeah, the come and they go, he was trying to say this. This and that, yeah, it wasn't in the...
And it's so didactic. Like, I mean, I saw this shortlist recently for, like, a bunch of people who got writing fellowships for novels or something, and one of them, it literally said in the pitch, this is about how we treat asylum seekers. And it's like, yeah, like, again, really not a great theme to explore, but...
What's the story?
What's the story? Like, what's the story that actually contains that theme? Mm. And to me, I look at that and I'm like, okay, well, of course you got funding because you said in there this about asylum seekers. It's like, okay, so that's straight up allegory. You're not being clever or subtle about how you approach this. You're telling a story that is meant to be obviously, this is making subtext text, essentially.
Yeah.
So why not just actually, instead of, you know, having some artistic roundabout way of exploring that theme, why not actually just make an honest film or book about that issue?
You know what I think the film industry, the funding bodies seem to just not understand is that the thing I love about movies is escapism. Like,
yeah,
you don't want to go and pay money to go to the cinema to watch your life sort of reflected back. You want something that's a little bit out there. It's like something that you want to go like on an adventure and watch a cool story, and then they just keep making the same stuff again and again. And it gets frustrating. And then I think you have writers and you have...
Look at Zootopia.
Yeah.
As like a prime example of something where you go to and it was like, yeah, it was
amazing creativity.
Fun, great film. And then you realize, actually, no, it's about racism. And because it is subtle in how it approaches that, and because it presents a fun, entertaining story first, I find it so much more powerful than a film that I think is trying to preach to me.
Yes. Even smarter than that, I found with Zootopia, because you get to about a third of the way through and you're like, oh, I see what they're doing here. She's the rabbit. He's the fox. Yeah, it's kind of like mixing up the races. It's the Lethal Weapon. It's the Shane Black, you know, and you think it's like this fun little cute idea.
No.
And you get to the end and you're like, oh my God, they've actually got something to say about this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, and I find it because like one thing that I really, really hate as a consumer is when I feel like something's preaching to me. Mm. Like if I feel like something is trying to make a political point and I know it's trying to do that and it's hitting me over the head with that point, I'm like, even if I completely agree with the point, which in many cases I probably do, I'm like, fuck off. Like literally, fuck off. Don't do this to me. I did not come to this to be fucking preached to. I came to this to be entertained because I really do believe your first role as a filmmaker, as an artist, as a storyteller should always be to entertain. First and foremost, everything else comes second. If you want to make a big, strong, powerful point, do it. Sure, but be fucking smart about it and entertain us first. Don't assume that people should take your film seriously. Don't assume that people should engage with your film just because you've got something important to say, because then you're not doing your job. Yep. Then you might as well be a university lecturer and you can make the point clearer. And with more clearer and with more clarity. Huh, great work.
I'll throw myself under the bus after that very impassioned speech. I think that the thing with all of this stuff that we've been talking about is a mix, is a variety. That the truth is we do want important things and we do want people to be striving for important things and political messages and all that. And we do want entertaining things as well. And I think the thing that both Michael and I strongly believe is that film and art and culture in general is better when you get a really strong mix
of
all that.
Absolutely.
Which is one of the things that we've really tried to do with Space Time, because the truth is there's a lot of things going around in America and Australia, and now that films are technically becoming easier to make, more people are making them and more people are doing genre stuff and zombie stuff and monster stuff and whatever. And I think now the thing is to sort of break beyond that and keep it fun, keep it entertaining, but really do try to do something smart.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Be trying to do something that elevates from, well, let's just get some chainsaws and just start chopping.
Well, it's like
what
we're talking about. It's like it's so easy to make films nowadays. It's like, yeah, so that means that because there's such a glut. I mean, it's the same with like what I'm talking about with Australian TV. It's like there's so much good stuff out there and there's so much content out there that there are a lot of really good films, a lot of really good TV shows that will simply escape my notice because I don't have enough hours in the day.
Yeah.
And so what can you do to make your product something that floats to the top, something that stands out among everything else? And I guess to bring back the Australian industry, I feel like the big problem here is that when we don't rely on people going to see films because people just don't go and see Australian films, I guess it's this sort of like almost self-fulfilling prophecy where they're like, where the government's like, okay, people aren't going to go and see Australian films, so we have to fund the important ones to make sure these things get made, which then means people are like, oh, well, if everything is just kind of sad and dreary and going to make me think about my life and issues, I won't see them. And so therefore there isn't really a market for Australian films, so it becomes a lot harder to get something like Space Time made.
Well,
and the cycle continues. But you guys have managed to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to how, like, I've got to say, this unwelcoming landscape,
how did you guys approach funding?
I mean, the idea of funding, like as you guys have been talking about it, it's like, I guess a lot of the points are valid, but at the same time, there seems to be this anger towards someone for not giving you something. And it's like, obviously, the industry in Australia is not as healthy as it could be. And it really is about everyone just doing whatever they can to try and fix that. And obviously, like, I feel like I don't want people to be looking at Space Time and saying, like, well, obviously they could do that. It's like, this has been very hard. Like, this, we put a lot of work into this. So I think that's what it comes down to. You got to be as smart as you can and educated as you can and as hardworking as you can and present yourself. The big key for us with Space Time was just the before any plot or character or whatever, being like, we're trying to make a time travel thriller, and people's eyes light up. And so it is about filling in those gaps of what people want to see. It's about knowing sort of that. And then you can sort of build something yourself. And I think that, you know, that's something that we're both very proud of.
I think that putting together Space Time was surprisingly easy in that, yes, as you say, people are attracted to the concept and people say, well, like, that sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds like something I want to be a part of. For us, I mean, it's also the Space Time and then there's everything we've been doing for the 12 years leading up to it. And you guys would know all this as well with your own work. Like, is this leads to that and then that leads to that and you grow and then that person says, hey, that was really cool. Count me in for your next thing. Can't wait to be part of it. And that's just the way it sort of goes. And you get your own sort of, I guess, you know, community and
that's
industry.
Right. Like you got to be as smart about it in terms of the stuff that you're doing, but also hopefully you guys are doing the same, that each time you work on something being like, well, you've worked well and you've worked well and just sort of putting this team together. And by the time we really had like the most professional crew working on Space Time.
Yeah, we were very lucky that we had so many of the people that had worked on previous projects all saying, right, when are we doing the next one? When are we just going to make a feature? Yeah. Come on. And we're like, oh, are you guys up for that? Because of course we want to. I think the key is just not waking up tomorrow and saying, I want to be a filmmaker. I'm going to start with a big fun sci-fi adventure.
Really like, also doing something and being like, well, that didn't work. I'm completely changing directions. It's all about learning from what you've done, whether it's you think it's a positive experience or a negative experience, just taking whatever you can from every situation. And the truth is it's taken us a long time. Like we met 12 years ago. We've been making shorts and, you know, the little bits and pieces for the last 10 years. You could say it took 10 years to get Space Time made.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, that's very true. I think it's also a good thing to consider filmmaking. There's no point rushing something out. There's no point finishing it just to have it finished. When it comes to film, it's sort of, it's when it's done, it lives forever. And
yeah,
you know, unless you're going back and doing special editions of special editions and so on. And so for me, I look at some of the other films that are made, I suppose at our budget level, and I say, oh man, it's like if they'd spent another 6 months in post, I feel like this could really have nailed it, or 6 months in the writing, or like just taken their time. And you everyone's can, in
you
such
can,
a hurry.
Yeah, you can feel it because we, you're like, obviously we've been in post-production for a while and we're going to be in post-production for a few more months. And we can feel it where it gets to the point of people like, excuse me, film is usually done by now. And we're like, this is the difference. Like this is the difference between like making something great and having something come out and people going, good effort. That was good.
Yeah.
You guys talked about how it's probably been like sort of a 12-year effort building up to this. But when did you guys have the idea for this film?
Well, this is – Space Time really is – two ideas brought together. I had for a long time been kicking around an idea which makes up the third act of the film. And then Adam had an idea for what he had talked to me about as a TV series. And that basically became the second act of the film. And so when once we decided to put those two ideas together, because I think my concept was really a large set piece more than anything. And then Adam had this idea. And so we said, well, wow, why don't we put them together, give them the same form of time travel. They're both sort of based around time travel. And then together we came up with the first act and then had the film. So we'd both been kicking around ideas for, I think, a few years.
Yeah,
really.
I remember the first real conversation, because obviously I think our first conversation at film school was because a friend of ours had laid out a whole bunch of posters that he'd just bought from like the cafeteria downstairs, and one of them was Back to the Future. That was pretty much the first conversation that we had on our first day of uni.
And it was love at first sight.
That's right. And it's things have never been the same. And then it's just been like, I've got ideas for time travel. What have you got? And it's just been a continuing conversation about the logistics of it, about how would it work. And because one of the things that we often talk about is the best time travel films, Terminator and Back to the Future and whatever, they get everything right in terms of so many things, but even the best ones always betray themselves in their own rules of time travel. It's a really complicated thing that no one seems to be able to really toe the line of. And so there was one thing where, well, if we have approached it, like, what would you think about this or that or whatever? And so that's just been a very long conversation over the years that we'll revisit. It's like, oh, I figured out how we could solve this. Yeah, Michael's idea of how time travel would work, we just kind of poured into this enormous ending to the film to go off in grand style. But it probably was about 3 years ago, I guess, that we got to the point where I was like, okay, well, we've got some characters and we've got a plot and whatever. This could be a TV show. And Michael's like, no, we're doing this now. And I was like, there's no way we're doing this now. You know, we're talking about doing like small things. And he's like, okay. And we literally sat down. And I think it was over the course of a couple of hours. It's like, well, you know, we've got this equipment. We've got this window of time. We've got these actors that I know are going to say yes to it. We've got this and that. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, what are we doing? And it's just a matter of like putting all of what we had down and the best thing that we could get from all of those pieces.
Well, yeah. I mean, wasn't the whole approach that Spielberg and Lucas had to Indiana Jones that they were like, all right, what do we want to see in a film? We want Nazis, want whips, we want guns, we want all of that. Let's just mash it all together. And I mean,
that's a cool approach.
I mean, that's kind of like I suppose we're all talking about our own work, so we might as well. But like, that was kind of how I approached my novel, Boone Shepherd. It was like, I was like, what do I like? I like time travel. I like literary figures. I like silly humor.
Yep.
I like Lemony Snicket and absurdist gothic stuff.
It's the way to throw do it. And just as long as you've got a strong enough, you know, thread to draw them all together. This is what David Lynch does as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
He'll just have an idea for scenes. And as long as until he's got like enough scenes that go together, he's like, oh, there we got a film.
And I love what you're saying about sort of waiting till something's ready, because I mean, I'm so, so impatient.
Yeah.
I'm the impatient part of the terrible people. Let's get it out. I just want it to be out in the world. But you're so right. Because like what you're saying about like, because I realize like I'm the first person to be like, I just want to get this thing made. I want to get, you know, like with the plays I do, it's like a sort of a conveyor belt where it's like next one, next one, next one, next one, next one.
And you're so excited about what people's reaction is going to be. That you're
exactly.
Just like,
that I throw it out there where it's like the reaction probably isn't going to be as good as it could be because I didn't take the time I could have to make it perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't believe in perfection, but like as good as it can be.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's funny because what you were saying just then, like, because I do a bit of side work, like teaching kids in a creative writing studio. And in this studio, basically every kid who works there writes a story, like a short story, and it gets published in an anthology book at the end of the year, which is a really cool thing when you're a kid, like your words are in print, there you go. And anyway, so with one of my class, I've sort of started talking to them about the next project they're going to work on, which will be the story that will go in the book. And one of the kids is quite young and he just likes, you know, writing kind of stories with like, you know, just sort of, you know, really immature humor, really like, you know, he's a kid. But I was saying to him, I was like, look, man, like when this, like, don't write a story about like scatological stuff. You're going to write a story that's going to be in a book that will be around forever. Write something that you're going to be really proud of because when it's in that book, it's going to be there forever. Do you want to look back on it in 10 years' time and go, man, I was good when I was a kid? Or do you want to look back at it and be like, oh, man, that's a bit embarrassing? And it's pretty much what you're saying. It's like, try to get it right because once it's out in the world.
Yeah.
And I guess that comes down to like, I guess, understanding that there is going to be an audience and it's hard to win that audience's trust back if you betray it with something that isn't ready.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I definitely know that with plays I put on that were not ready to go and they go on and suddenly I realize a month later, I'm like, that was really shit. I'm like, that was really bad. Yeah. And because of
everyone
my impatience
has those moments.
To get it out there, I didn't put on something good. And I asked people to pay for a product that was not ready. Those people aren't going to come back for my next one. Mm. And that's a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah.
I think the key there is just not to make the same mistakes again.
Exactly. It's like the same before, it's a process of trial and error.
And every single project take something away from it. Even if you're like, that was the worst thing, there's always something to take away. You're like, well, I'll know that next time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm. That's like what you guys said before. You spend 10 or 12 years making short films before you make something massive like Space Time. And so you're ready. You've learned some of your lessons. You learn what works.
The world, I mean, you want to – I think, you know, the dream scenario is always when you can put something out there and say with complete confidence, this is what I set out to make.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I am proud of. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, that's okay because I fulfilled the vision I want to fulfill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, I think
that's
is most important.
That's
thing.
The goal, yeah.
So what is your like, so I guess going on that with goals, when Space Time, you know, is finished, what happens next? Like what will be the next step with it and where are you hoping it will end up? What is your pipe dream perfect scenario of where this film will go?
I mean, I think we've made something that audiences will really enjoy. And so I do hope that it gets a chance to reach a larger audience. We've been fortunate in that just with the release of our first teaser trailer, which really doesn't show much at all. And there's just a little taste of what's to come. It goes for just over a minute.
Yeah.
And we've had an awful lot of interest from distributors and sales agents. Because I think that science fiction, and I think that especially sort of slick science fiction.
Like grounded science fiction.
It's sort of, I think it just has a built-in audience. Not that they're like, oh, well, take whatever you got. Like, I think but, you know, the right kind of movie with the right sort of style and feel does have an audience that's ready for it. So for us, it's really, we want to complete the film to the best that we possibly can, not be showing it off too soon, which you know, comes back to the being patient and getting it right.
Which again is a real temptation when people are starting to talk to you about the things that they've been starting to talk to us about, and it's like, well, maybe we will just show them the rough cut. Like, no, don't do that. Don't do it.
So we really want to get it to a place that we're really comfortable saying, like, hey, look, 2/3 of it is almost done. You can see how the effects work. You can see that it all makes sense. And then from there, I guess it's getting it as far and wide as we can. That might be a case of trying to get into a major festival and then selling distribution rights through that. It might be that we are lucky enough to sell it before it's completed. We're not too sure, to be perfectly honest.
It comes down to being as open as possible, I think. And certainly I've, having known Michael for a long time, I've had to learn the lesson of patience. That was me. Yeah. That I was like, we'll just grab a camera and we'll go out and we'll do a trailer and then people are going to like it. And it's like, no, calm down. And so this was like a few years ago, I would have been saying, can we please just show it, the first third of this film to someone? We'll get some money. We'll do it. It's like, no. So yeah, it's about taking our time and also not jumping at the first offer. There's a few people that we've been talking to along the way, and that's one of the lessons that they've been telling us so that we don't have to make it ourselves, which is, even as far as proposals go and the deals start coming in, be patient with that as well, because so many people just, oh my God, you're going to give me money for this, and they just jump at it. So it's, everything is about being as open and, when the time comes, being as decisive as possible.
It's very easy to get excited when you get a call from an assistant in LA with the American accent. They say, are you free to take a call from so-and-so from this company? I'm like, Yes, of course I am.
This is Jeeves from LA.
Yeah.
Would you like to take a call?
Yeah. And then they put you on hold and they're like, hi, Michael, And it is really easy to go,
someone in America likes me.
Yeah. I'm in the player. Like, this is great. Yeah. I think that it is a little bit of trying to not get too excited and sort of see what opportunities come based on the work. And that's the thing. Like, when I talk about being patient, it's because I want the work to speak for itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really want you to go, okay, yeah, we see what you're trying to do now. Cool. Awesome. This is great.
See, it's a fine line to walk to, isn't it? Because like, so much of it is, if you say, I want to be patient, then maybe you miss an opportunity as opposed
it's
to-
a gamble. Absolutely.
It's always it's a gamble. Yeah. But like, I think-
It's about having faith in the work you've done.
In the end of the day, it's like you guys have enough faith in the project to be like, even if this one person, even if I don't give it to this first person who bites, you know, there might be a better person along the road, because I believe the project is good enough to attract that kind of attention,
The other thing we've also always said is that, having this being a project that we've just kind of put together ourselves and we've gotten other people involved and we've gotten support from, independent people, if nothing else, even like, it's this film isn't really about making any money off. This isn't this is a calling card for...
Well, you mean that as a basic, like if all else fails?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, that's right. No, like, take the movie without paying us, please. Yeah. Like, that's what we made it for. You think we want to make money off this damn thing?
Yeah. Well, no. Like, I mean, I think particularly the spirit in which it started of, and as I say, we had people that were in our team and crews in the past that were saying, hey, come on, let's do it. Let's do a full feature now. They weren't saying, because it's going to make us billionaires. Mm. They were saying, because it's fun.
Which would also be the wrong attitude as well.
That's right. It's just about sticking with what you like.
So what is, we probably should have covered this a bit earlier, but like, so pitch us Space Time. Tell us the plot. Tell us what we're dealing with here.
Yeah. So Space Time is a sci-fi thriller. It's a time travel adventure. It's about a physicist who is trying to build an engine to travel through space in this brand new way. And it goes horribly wrong. But what he does discover is that he has accidentally invented time travel.
Cool.
So in the process of this first test, when it all goes wrong, lives are lost and they lose their funding. And it's really about having a project which is well-financed and has all the government bodies behind it and whatnot. That all is taken away. And then this scientist who has this belief that he has stumbled on time travel now has to turn to the underworld and black market to try and finance the rebuilding. So in some ways, there's a nice parallel for independent projects.
Thing is, it was actually took a while for us to really pick up on that it was like the second or third draft that we're like,
funny how that happens. Wait, so
this is what we're talking about before.
Like, writing ourselves.
That is the whole thing. We didn't sit down and say, let's do something that's about the independent process. We said, let's do something about fun time travel. Then we got to the end of the writing and went, this is kind of like a parallel. Oh, how cool.
Then, that's awesome. And then you're like halfway through the process, and once you pick up on that, you can then extrapolate on this and that, and it like becomes this organic, like, this will really bring the strength of the characters past.
Coming back to what we're talking about before, about like messages and themes and all of that stuff, it's like, what you've done is like, there is subtext and there is more to this, but it's not the first and foremost thing.
Yeah.
It's like, and even to you guys, and that to me speaks to like how organic and genuine it is. You guys are like, no, we didn't even realize what this was about. Yeah. So it's like, so your audience isn't going to watch and go, oh, yeah, all right, guys, I see what you're doing here.
It's
like they'll watch it and see the fun sci-fi adventure because you made it.
That was kind of part of it, that it's like seeing ourselves in it, but in a way that we're like, well, I think everyone can kind of. And so it actually becomes this story of, people's professional careers and their personal lives and the sacrifices that they have to make for one or the other or whatever. And so hopefully it's actually sort of a universal thing that people will be like, I'm going through the exact same thing.
Yeah, I don't know how these for sure.
I think that's the best way to write too. You like kind of smash out a draft or two and then you look at it and you go, oh, that's what it's about. Yeah. And then you can kind of go back in and flesh that out a bit.
And you can hone in on the theme a lot more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You start out with goals, I think, for what you want it to be about. But what
and
it
the goals shift.
Being,
yeah. That's right. And that's fine.
I'm curious to know with you guys collaborating on the script, how that sort of process worked, because I know for myself, I tend to just write by myself. Mm. And I think Gabe, you do that quite often as well. How do you guys do it? Do you sit in the same room and type with each other? Do you break the scenes up and do things individually and come together? How does it work?
For the most part, we write separately and like have ideas and like bring them to meetings and like I want this to happen, I want that to happen. And then, yeah, it's like I'm very much the same way that I have trouble writing with anyone else in the room. And you see them, you know, Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant writing The Office and they're like, oh, and then this will happen and then that. I'm like, I can't do that. I've got to be so like – nothing distracting me. But then for the polish, we usually will come together and it'll be like on the screen and like changing some dialogues and some beats and whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, in the very beginning, it's just a conversation with us.
Oh, absolutely.
And like we'll have like the laptop hooked up to the TV and be typing. And so like that first, when we broke all the relationship stuff for Act Two, that was a one-page document that we were just typing and like I jump on the keyboard for a bit and you jump on the keyboard.
In
and
very
that
bad
kind of
English
thing.
Of like this person.
Yeah, really very sloppy. And then it is, go away and do this. And then like it just goes back and forth. Mm. And I think anytime we had a really good idea, that was always, all right, well, quick, let's get together and then talk about how this can fit and that can fit. And then it would be dividing up.
Yeah, a few phone calls of like, oh, I'm about to change this scene and it's really going to change it. So I just have to let you know. Yeah.
So often, like, especially the way that I work, I'll be thinking, well, I really, really want this set piece and I really want to have a scene where this happens. And it will be, hey, I want to do this. How can we get this in there? Yeah. And then it will usually be like the next day you'll come and say, hey, I had a thought about your thought wanting to do that with the time bubble opening, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. What about if she has to get a blah, blah? And and it's just that. I think,
I mean, obviously, as I've said for a long time, when people, I haven't experienced writer's block for a long time, just because I know I don't sit down to write until I've got a backlog of things in my head. There's like this, people like, oh, I just sat down to write and nothing was coming. It's like, well, things don't really come to you when the page, like surely you're walking around and you'll think of something and store it away. I feel like writing is actually thinking. And then the actual writing of it is just transcribing it to the
I'm exactly the same. That's like it's in the shower and it's on the bus. Yeah. That's when the good stuff comes.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, and and you know, like I definitely find like I go for walks and like let it kind of play out in my head. But I do find that like as I'm sitting there in front of the page and I'm typing, I'll be like, oh, wait, shit, what if that happens? And then, but then I don't sit there and write that straight away. I'm like, okay, I need to let that percolate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then I'll get up, then I'll go for a walk and I'll play out the potentials of where that plot point can go and then decide if it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. You loop the scene in your head about 5,000 times and then refine it every time. Yeah. And then
I have had strange looks and I'm like going for walks and somebody's like looking at me and I'm like, oh, right, I'm. Without realizing it, I started acting the scene out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, all right, I'm a normal person. Sometimes, this is my weird trick. Sometimes when I'm like, I'm really in that zone, and I'm like, and the story's kind of playing out in my head, and I just find myself automatically like making hand gestures or like saying the lines out loud or stuff like as I'm doing it, I'll pretend I'm on the phone.
Get away with it these days. Just put some headphones in. Are they a crazy person or are they on the phone?
Definitely a crazy person.
I'm curious, how did you guys approach the funding? Did you crowdfund it all? Did you go through like, is it Screen Queensland up there? Or?
It is Screen Queensland,
We did none of those things. For me, crowdfunding is a really tricky one and I have I think for crowdfunding, if you aren't an established celebrity or name or anything like that, your audience are your friends. And if you're a filmmaker who's trying to make films, your friends are all filmmakers. And if your friends are all filmmakers, they've all got a crowdfunding campaign that they're trying to make. And it just
you give me 20 bucks, I'll give you 20 bucks. Like, just save your money and make it.
So there's always this sort of echo chamber with I look at my feed on any one day and it's 18 different people asking me to put $10
money
into their dream project, which sometimes works. And sometimes
if it works,
like,
if it works, that's
fantastic.
Great. Yeah, there's nothing against crowdfunding, but
So we very early on decided not to do that. I've also always had the philosophy, and there, again, it's also that thing of like looking at your heroes and seeing how they did it and whatnot. I've always had this philosophy that if you really believe in this project and if you're going to do it properly, you should really put your money behind it yourself.
Matters.
So the bulk of the funding just kick off principal photography. I went and took a big bank loan. I had a whole lot of savings. Adam had some savings. And then our other producer, Jai, he also had some savings as also took another loan as well. And so we covered enough to get us into principal photography. halfway through.
I was going to say, shoot, or so we thought.
Well, so the, well, there were things, yeah. But there was also what we tried to do was be quite smart in how the production was put together. So that there were things in the script where we would say, like, all right, this is flexible in terms of the location, time of day, if it's raining, if it's not raining. No, never was there a scene that absolutely must be a golden sunshiny day. And you know,
we had contingencies. Like if it's raining, then suddenly the scene is this, and it's a completely different.
Yeah, we always sort of had in our mind, like, well, wouldn't it be great if it does rain? Because then he can turn up with an umbrella and be like, hold it over,
which,
or whatever.
Which again, there is a scene where that happens. A very emotional scene that we hadn't thought of as being in the rain, and all of a sudden it's raining. It's like, this helps.
Yeah. That's right. So we have all these sort of like, oh yeah, in our mind, these are the ways we'll get around things. So I think in approaching it in a way that was flexible and always kept it about story and characters, and that all the everything else was sort of like play it as it lies approach of things sort of, you know, folding, mixing meant that we would usually be able to find a solution. We were fortunate that as we got into the middle of filming, we had a couple of instances where we could go this way and it would cost a little bit more, or we could go this way and we could do it for our budget. And we were like, well, it'd be really great to bring in some more money. So our producer Jai approached an investor and said, hey, have a look at some of the footage from the first few days of shooting. And they kind of went bananas for it.
It wasn't just a footage. It was actually so lucky the way it turned out that we looked at the scenes that we had shot up until that point, and we were like, just on the mood of the scenes and the tone, it's like such a great sampler of what this film is. We can make a little trailer from this. And we basically cut like a minute and a half teaser trailer.
It was smart for that, but it was a disaster for, well, not a disaster, but it was, I regret now. Our second night was one of the biggest action set pieces of the
thing. We thought,
let's load it at the front of the schedule because we'll just all be full of energy. Yeah.
If it takes longer to shoot this action sequence, then it's much better to do that in the beginning than drag it out at the end. Yeah. And man, it was a killer.
It was very tough, but it was all through, we shot through the night outside under the Story Bridge. But it meant that we had all these action scenes that we could put into this little
character stuff, trailer. Some action. Yeah.
So we brought on our first independent investor, and that was just based on the reaction of the footage, and that got us through principal. And then as soon as we hit post, we were pretty stoked with how it had come up. And I think as anyone who works in independent film knows, you don't really know what you've got until the end. Like, you're like, oh, I just hope it works. You're like, we're shooting 8 pages a day.
I remember after first night, I was like, because it was just that's not what I expected. And I was just so frazzled because we'd just shot for like almost 13 hours or something and no sleep. And I was just like, Is this going to be good?
Yes.
I don't know what that was. Like, but we just got to keep pages. Going.
Yeah.
What's like, I think the standard is like 3, yeah?
Yeah, 2 to 3 is the standard. So we were really flying through it. But that was also, I say that, and I don't think you would know if you watched the film. Oh, no. We were really lucky. I mean, we had a really strong cast, well-rehearsed, who all understood the material and really were engaged in it. And so we never had a point where I think there were maybe 3 instances in the entire shoot where there was a, hey, can we stop for a second and just quickly work out why this is happening.
One of the big things that really helped us was that our director of photography, Daniel Maddock, insisted, and as we completely agreed on him, using practical lighting for so many scenes. So it meant it took a long time to set it up, and once it was set, you just run.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I'm a huge advocate of Steadicam, and I love longer takes that consist of really complicated blocking, which, you know, we've all seen the memes making fun of, don't worry, we'll just shoot it with natural light and we'll do it all in one take. It'll be faster. And of course, everyone knows that's never the case.
Yeah.
But we were fortunate that with the right planning, the right actors, the right Steadicam operator, everything did come together so that we were able to have scenes that looked exactly the way that I wanted them to look, that had the movement and the feeling and the blocking.
And from one shot to the next, there's like a minute, like not even a minute of like, just shift this light. There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
We've switched the line, and it's like, oh my God, look at it.
So we were fortunate in that way, just the practicality of it. But to come back to the financing, it was then always on the strength of the footage that we got into the cut and had a look at some bits and pieces, and we're like, wow, this is really strong. Let's approach some more.
So how do you go about approaching? Because I've like looked at different projects before and looked at like approaching investors and stuff, and it terrifies me. Like the idea of walking up to somebody and being like, hey, I've got this thing.
Yeah.
Give me some money to make this thing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're talking to the wrong guys.
Yes and no. Look, I mean, I've certainly approached investors over the last 10 years for projects. I think that like in Space Time's case, we're very fortunate. Our producer Jai is just a gun at
a machine.
Finding people. But it's also, I think that there's a lovely cycle that sort of, it sort of feeds itself in that the material is great, so we get excited.
Yeah.
So that excitement is carried into
approaching. It's almost a perpetual motion machine.
That's what I wanted. Yeah. Thank you. So the enthusiasm carries us into these pitches where it's contagious and they see the material and they get excited and it all sort of feeds itself. Yeah. I think the thing, whenever I talk to somebody about them approaching an investor to help with a project, is they always seem to come from a place of, we've got to trick this investor into believing in the project.
Yeah.
And we've never had to with Space Time. It's always been like, hey, check out how cool this looks. Isn't that great? And because Jai and I have taken, you know, scenes of the film and shown it to investors, you know, in our pitch and, like, you know, bringing an iPad, and we can always tell when they engage because they start asking questions like, oh, she doesn't know that that's that yet, does she? And we're like, no, she doesn't. And, you know, we're like miming a high five to each other. But but that's not to say that, like, the film is strong. The film is strong because of our excitement for it. It all just sort of feeds itself, and it's easy to attract a crowd when there's already a bit of a crowd, I guess. So,
like I said, to me, the biggest lesson that I've learned with Space Time is, as I've said a few times now, is the mix. You've got to get a mix of everything. You need action, you need humor, you need a bit of romance, a bit of story, and even behind the scenes, you need a mix of, you know, the people who are really, you know, good with, you, like I just said, the DOP, Milan, our Steadicam guy, like the crew for this film was just so good. And then you also need people who are business-minded and whatever. And it's like, I try to be, I think I'm pretty good, but, you know, Michael and Jai really do, you know, nail that stuff. And then once you sort of have this machine moving, it just keeps moving. Yeah. And it's almost becomes harder to stop it than just to keep it going. Yeah.
And I think, like, the types of people that we're getting to work with that are getting behind the project, they want to see good movies.
Yeah.
They are on the train. You know, they're really very much the kind of people that they see Space Time, like, they get excited by, let's make a good movie. This will be great.
Mm.
It's about making something that everyone is excited by.
And talking about that, what's your approach to the marketing and sort of, because I mean, you've got that uphill battle, I guess, because it's an Aussie film.
Mm.
How sort of outside the box do you guys need to think in terms of your marketing on what I imagine would be a small marketing budget? What sort of things have you guys got planned?
I mean, the first thing, and this seems like the most obvious thing to me, Australian film shouldn't be a genre. Mm. And I think that if you start with the assumption that your film is not an Australian film, it's a science fiction film. It's made in Australia.
Mm.
It's set in Australia for much of the plot, not all of it, but a large chunk of it. But I don't see us as an Australian film.
Yeah. Taxi Driver didn't fit into the American film genre.
Yeah.
It was just, it's just a great film.
That's right. You know? So when you start with that frame of mind, I think that the steps become a little easier in terms of how you market it. Now, that's not how you get money to have a huge marketing campaign. We're talking just about the approach. And as soon as you do that, everybody goes, was this shot in Australia?
Mm-hmm.
Was this? Oh, it was. Okay, cool. Like, that's something that becomes, and that's a great thing, I think, because I really hate this idea. And I think there are so many brilliant Australian films, of course, that have missed out on a larger audience because they've been marketed as Australian films. Mm. Red Dog should be marketed as an Australian film because it is.
It's about, very, very quintessential.
Yeah, that's right.
You think about the first character of that film and it's Australia.
Like, that's right.
Yeah,
exactly. But something like Space Time, we never say the word Australia. We never feature any major Australian iconography. Mm. But the story makes perfect sense to be set in Australia. It's about these scientists that are going underground and trying to get off the radar, and they set up this operation in the middle of Australia. There's a story reason for it. So there's never that, you know, we don't have a kangaroo hopping through the background or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think, from a marketing point of view, the attitude has always been, what are other sci-fi films doing? Not what are other Australian films doing? I think, you know, Adam, myself, Jai, we all have a real appreciation of film marketing anyway. It's not the devil. It's the, wow, how cool are posters? And, you know, we're sitting in a studio right now that we're surrounded by some incredible poster art. You know,
certainly it was
your walls here.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's such an art in itself, creating images that are striking and that can tell a story and excite you. So that side of things is really appealing to us. And as a result, because we enjoy poster design and promotional materials and all the rest of it, we put as much love into the marketing side as we do into the production. On top of that, and I know, you know, I'm not the only person to have enjoyed this. Like, we've been so lucky that there have been filmmakers throughout time, especially over the last maybe 5 or 10 years, that have really opened up pulled back the curtain and showed the process of making it. You know, Peter Jackson and his video blogs, and Bryan Singer did the same on Superman Returns. Mm-hmm. And there are so many now that are just so exciting because you get the story of how it's come together.
Yeah, yeah.
Being told as it's coming together. So we did the same. We really tried to focus on not trying to be mysterious and aloof. We don't show everything,
yeah.
But we've shown an awful lot, and we've built up a pretty significant following of people that are excited by the making of, and
unless you feel like you're a part of it.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at the Facebook page, it almost is the story of how we've kind of made the film, because it's just video after video, like right from the beginning of like, and that was also one of the early discoveries between Michael and I, that we both had the exact same thing, which was a VHS tape when we were kids, and we had just recorded anything to do with Star Wars. Special edition leading into Phantom Menace. We were just so keen for that.
All the same ads recorded. Yeah, the same Angela answer. Bishop special.
Do you remember that Angela Bishop special where like this happened and that? And it's like we had the exact same VHS.
And we made little covers for them.
Yeah, that's right.
It was great. Oh,
the John Williams music videos in there. Yeah. That it's like, yeah, we've both, and not in terms of being savvy as kids of like, how do you market a film? Just being so into it that it's obvious. It's just, it's just something organic that we've come to, you know, this film and just been like, well, we know exactly how we want to market this film.
And I think, like, obviously we're not talking from the position of having successfully marketed it. It hasn't come out yet. We're just looking at it in terms of how we want to approach it. But I think that the key to good marketing is good storytelling. Mm. And I think that whenever you are trying to lie to the audience and be like, just distract them with a shiny thing, that's when they go, eh, that doesn't seem like the real deal. That sounds fake. And that's when you see marketing of not necessarily Australian films, any film that is pretending to be something it's not. For us, it's, you know, you want your marketing to tell a story. You want your poster to tell a story. You want the line when you're talking about the film to tell a story.
Yeah.
I think that taking the same approach to how we want to market it, and, you know, this is something that may be ripped out of our control if we do sell to a major distributor, but for the time being,
so far it's good.
Yeah, it's working
and
out really well.
And it's also fortunate that we do live in this time that as with the filmmaking, it's becoming easier. We're in this digital age where the tools are with us that, you know, you're asking, oh, how do you market this film? It's like, it's very obvious. You go on the internet and you tell people about it because even the films with, you know, $1 billion budget, that's what their marketing people are doing. It's like, oh, we're just going to kind of go on and make a website and direct people with links and stuff. Yeah. It's like, that's what everyone's doing these days. Mm. That's the best way to get it out there.
Yeah. I guess rely on the product strong enough that it will draw people's attention.
Yeah, that's right.
We also have a rule with everything that we put up on our social media that we never are repeating ourselves. We're never putting up information that's boring. Like if we're putting up a video, it's to tell you something new. If we're putting up an announcement or a photo, there's always a graphic. The graphic is always something you haven't seen before. It uses new photos. Like, try and always keep it interesting, which is approach it the same way. Storytelling, boring story is the one that always loops back to the exact same beats. The one that's interesting and exciting is the one that has fresh, new
And much material. Like a show, you're trying to keep people on board. So there are times where I think a while ago it was like, well, we've just been in editing. That's it. So what do? Like every single week have a video about editing. So you do take a bit of a gap, but make sure there's something going on that every couple of weeks you can just put something out there like, it's still going, guys. Yeah.
If you're
going
to ask for an audience's attention,
you
want to make sure you've got something that's going to hold it.
Yeah.
So I guess ultimately what it comes down to is how to make an Australian film. Make a good one.
Look, just make a good one, eh?
Just do it. Easy as that. Yeah. Only 12 years in the making. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, that's right.
Piss easy, eh?
The thing, I'll tell a story. Like, when I was in grade 11, I remember going, it was a school trip or something to Sydney, and they had a Borders in Sydney, so we didn't have a Borders in Brisbane, I don't think, at the time. And in there was a book called The Guerrilla Filmmaker's Guide. And it was like $70. And I was, of course, in grade 11, I didn't have $70. So I called mum and I said, I found what I would like for my birthday. This book about guerrilla filmmaking, da, da, da. She transferred me the money so I could buy it. And I devoured it on the bus ride back. You know, it was a school trip, so you'd take the bus down. It was a 24-hour bus ride back to Queensland. And I devoured this book. And I started to panic reading it because it was so many people required and all these, this person will cost you that much and this will be this and that'll
be
that.
This is how much it costs to feed them?
Yeah, and like, you know, you've got to shoot it. And this is also about 14 years ago. Mm. So it's like when you're making the choice between film and tape. Like, oh my God, how am I going to afford film? And and I remember as a 16-year-old panicking that, oh my God, it's impossible to make a film. This just can't be done. And then I spent 12 years, I suppose, sort of proving 16-year-old me wrong by in that, well, you just start doing it.
Yeah.
and you will find these people. You just start making stuff that's of quality and in the right spirit, I should say, that people will, you know, if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. It really is in the doing, and you can sort of will it all to come together, which I guess, you know, the real way to get your film made is just somehow. I just stole that from Robert Zemeckis. That's his story of it was George Lucas'
on the bus?
Advice. Yeah, that was George Lucas' advice to Robert Zemeckis when Zemeckis went to see him after graduating from UCLA. He went and showed his student film, and he said, "Oh, I want to be a filmmaker. I want to direct features. You know, how do I do it, George?" George says to Robert, "Somehow." And it's the it's just somehow. It. Like, there isn't a path, there isn't a definite way. Like, what worked for us won't necessarily work for everyone else. But the takeaway is, make something that's great that you want to see. Don't go, well, I can't make the stuff I want to make, so I guess I have to make kitchen sink drama.
Yeah.
Again, kitchen sink dramas are fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
But if they're like, not what you want to make. Not,
but yeah, but exactly. If they're not what you want to make, the audience knows.
Yeah, I think that there's a few things I was going to say earlier, like with the mix. You've got to have a mix of the time to switch your brain on and the time to switch your brain off, because I consider myself a very anxious person, and the number of times where you're like, well, we can't do that because that's just not going to work. And there are times where you just have to say, no, we're jumping in and doing it. That is what's happening. And you really do have to have the right amount of that blind confidence just to say, we're going, we're doing it.
But that's not blind confidence, because we know the material is strong because we spent the time in the writing. Like, when we're talking about having the confidence to jump in, I mean, we're talking, this is a big set piece that requires a cast of 40 but like, when I'm saying, don't worry, I'll be fine, it's because I'm like, no, I know this is an engaging scene, and that whatever happens, if the truck falls through or this doesn't show up or that prop's not great, I know what they're saying is key, and I know we can find a way
to switch your brain on and
work.
Back on and be like, okay, well, how do we solve that problem when it comes up? Yeah. So, yeah, it's all a mix.
Cool, that's probably a pretty good place to wrap up. But no, like, thanks for the, I mean, I suppose, like, it's interesting for us because, I mean, you know, we, for Sean and I, we're, you know, obviously we're podcasters and playwrights and authors, but like, film is something we haven't made too many inroads into. And we've spoken at points, like you, me, Damo and Tom and stuff, about like maybe making a feature, or maybe, you know, just casually making a feature, or like or doing something, or like looking for funding or anything. And it's never really come to anything. So like, so it's good to have you guys here to like get a bit of actual insight into somebody who's actually made an Australian film that, you know, again, Australian film's not a genre, but like outside.
It is still an Australian film.
It is still an Australian film, but like something outside, you know, the general parameters of what an Australian film is assumed to entail, which is, really interesting. And it's been a really fascinating insight. So thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. No. Thank you.
And so where can we find Space Time?
Well, your best bet, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, Twitter, all at Spacetime Movie. We have a website. It is spacetimemovie.com. So they're all your best bets to find out more about the film. We've got our teaser trailer up there, and we have our regular video updates, you know, showing the making of and photos and all the rest of it. Yeah, we keep it pretty up to date.
Awesome. We'll put all that stuff in the show notes.
Yeah, that will be there.
And we'll be touring around with Supernovas around the country for the next few months. So.
Cool. Yeah, that's right. When's the next one?
Well, the next one is Sydney.
Sydney.
And I don't know when it is.
However, I think it's June.
Depends
I think
on
it's
when
June.
This episode comes out as to whether that's going to be relevant.
Oh,
we'll put it in the show notes.
You might have missed it. Yeah.
Look, build a time machine.
Yeah. Just look for Supernova.
Yeah, that's it. And on that note, I've been Gabe.
I've been Sean.
I've been Michael.
I've been Adam.
And if you guys have any questions about Space Time, obviously contact these guys, or if you want to harass us, you can email us in at moviemaintenance@sanspantsradio.com. Is that correct?
I think so.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, at MMSanspants is our Twitter handle, or personally, I'm at Goldbergmoser.
I'm at Sidekick of Dowie. You guys on Twitter?
I think so. I haven't used it for so long. Just Space Time.
Space Time Movie. That's where all the good stuff is.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, cheers. See you next time.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support the show, why not become a member at sanspantsplus.com and get early access to our shows, a bunch of exclusive content, and much, much more. That's sanspantsplus.com.